Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our regular co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, expert in waivers and exemptions for your vaccine rights and your health. And Alan, today is May 3rd, 2012, and I almost couldn't get into the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and thanks for persevering and getting on back in. I was having trouble reaching blogtalkradio.com this morning myself. They must have some very busy servers or something going on.
Yes, I kept dialing in, and they said, this line is busy. So I finally was able to get in, and luckily we can continue with our regular show programming. And I want to recommend that people listening can get involved in this educational movement by going to the NVIC, National Vaccine Information. How do you say that?
They have what they call their advocacy portal, and NVIC.org is the National Vaccine Information Center's website, but their advocacy portal is NVICAdvocacy.org. And that is a separate website, but part of the NVIC organization. And the NVIC advocacy portal lists pending legislation in states around the country, and there is a ton of stuff. We'll do an update on a little bit of that today, but I would say at a glance here, it looks like they have 20 or more bills. Pending bills in probably six or seven states around the country.
Wow.
And this is an ongoing process, and I really want to encourage folks to join the NVIC advocacy portal because it's free to join, and then you can keep up with legislation in your state, but not just vaccine legislation, but not just keep up with legislation. They have information there when you join that and become a member. You can quickly find out who your representatives are and get quick contact information. So this is a way they have really streamlined the vaccine legislative advocacy process. Very few of us, Debbie, as you well know, have time to take on a whole part-time job, which is really what it is if you take on supporting or opposing a bill with your state legislature and then trying to gather support for your position on that. So the NVIC has taken the bulk of the time and energy to that process upon themselves so that the rest of us can participate very easily. Terrific system.
Yes. So, I'm thinking if I get involved in another organization and get tons and tons of emails in my inbox, it's going to be overwhelming. And I wonder if other people out there are thinking the same thing. And if we can, learn how to get like a weekly digest of news or just let it come in and flow and just pick up a little bit of information so that you have the idea that something is happening, then when there is actual action where you need to take a step to advocate for yourself, you are ready and you're in touch. Even if you don't take action throughout most of the year, at least have an inkling that something is happening in your area. I mean, that's the only thing I can say.
Yeah, well, the advocacy portal is not something that's is going to hit you up with email. It's a system whereby you can proactively go out to the website and see what's going on. Now, there may be occasions when one of the state directors with the advocacy portal would send out an email to everybody in their state when there's some particular action item needed. But you will definitely not be flooded with email for joining this organization. It is primarily there as a vehicle that we can use when we choose proactively to participate in the legislative process. But again, that's not something you have to go research and figure out how to do. You can just join the advocacy portal, and they'll keep you up to speed on anything you need to know. They have a list right on their homepage of pending bills, a real quick summary of what each bill is. Now, we've talked about a number of bills in different states on this show, and we'll talk about do a quick update at the beginning of today's show as well. The ones that I tend to focus on most, just because I have the legal frame of reference in which I'm looking at these bills, are bills where there appears to me to be a very clear constitutional or other kind of legal conflict. The practical reality is that states can pass any law they want to, whether it's constitutional or not, whether it conflicts with other state or federal laws or not. So it's not, we don't live in the ideal world where you can take the science to your state legislator and they will say, oh, this is a bad idea, because politics is unfortunately what makes the world go round in this system. But one of the things that is potentially particularly powerful in terms of bolstering your argument or your position is if you can take something to your state representative and say, look, this bill, the way this thing is worded, it is a violation of the Constitution or other law, you know, depending on what the particular bill and issue is. Because at least technically they can't pass a bill if it's in violation of the Constitution. All of our state and federal representatives take an oath to uphold the federal Constitution, and state representatives also to uphold the state Constitution. So while the practical reality is that's not going to stop them from voting for a bill, it does provide another potentially powerful disincentive for passing a bad bill, for example. So the ones we talk about here on this show tend to be those that involve constitutional or other legal issues. Many other bills, though, are pending that want to add vaccines to the system or do other things that are problematic, and we need to oppose those. At the same time, there are a number of bills pending in different states that we would want to support, the introduction of philosophical exemptions and other kinds of things, where it would just be real benefit to freedom of choice and the ability and right to make informed choices. So they have a summary on the homepage that gives a really good listing. It lists the states and it lists pending legislation in each state where there is pending legislation that they're aware of, and whether it's something that somebody with an alternative vaccine view would want to support or oppose. So
it sounds like it's really worthwhile to get involved and just be part of that, and then you're only going to get an emergency or an alert or a warning for something that's going on in your state. I wanted to ask you, Alan, I thought I read something about you're having a talk show with Mike Adams on Natural News. Am I mistaken?
Not with Mike Adams, with Jonathan Landsman, but yes,
okay.
Have that coming on this evening. Thanks for bringing that up. That'll be nine o'clock tonight.
Very cool. Okay.
We will be talking about what I refer to and have talked about in the past as the vaccine police state, and then they also have a place where people can ask questions in advance of a show. We'll be addressing some of those topics having to do with healthcare employees and what I refer to as vaccine custody disputes, topics we've talked about on this show, and I'm sure we'll visit again in the future. But thanks for bringing that up, Debbie.
Well,
invite
congratulations.
Everybody.
Congratulations. I mean, this is a really major news-making website, and you should have lots of listeners.
Well, I certainly hope so. It's quite an honor to have been asked to do that, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. Okay, so today, are we going to be talking about what's going on in Australia, or are we going to do more local news?
Well, I thought first I would give a quick summary of what's going on with just a little bit of some of the vaccine legislation that we've been talking about in recent shows and kind of tracking, and so just a couple of brief updates. And if you are familiar with what was in that Australia information, let's cover that, because I didn't have a chance to look at that in depth, but it was some really important stuff. And one of the beautiful things about Homeopathy World Community is that it's exactly that, a world community. And one of the terrific things about this show is that we have information that comes to us from around the world. And so it is quite fascinating to me, and I think an advantage to our listeners in particular, that we take a look at the global perspective from time to time. So we'll certainly talk about some of the news that's going on in places around the world. But I thought if I, just again, a brief update, we had a bill in California, AB 2109, which if it becomes law, will require people exercising non-medical vaccine exemptions in California to have those go through a medical doctor to get have a doctor sign a form, and if I remember correctly, probably have to get a lecture from the doctor about what a terrible and awful person they are for refusing vaccines. As a similar bill in Washington State was passed last year, and now we're hearing, I'm hearing a mixture of good news and bad news about that bill, but some people are having difficulty finding a doctor at all who will even sign the form for a religious or philosophical exemption there, let alone but when they will, it's often ridiculously expensive because the doctors there have to basically give a lecture about the wonders of vaccines. And, of course, they're going to charge for that time. So the bill, apparently just yesterday in California, had been recently referred back to the Appropriations Committee because there had been some amendment to it. And I don't have the details of the amendment right now, but it has gotten through the Appropriations Committee. So my understanding now is that this will go on to the full General Assembly now, to the House and the Senate, and they'll see if they can now get this through. But it's gotten through the Health Committee and the Appropriations Committee. And so the bill is moving forward. So we need to keep our eyes on that, and folks in California especially need to be contacting their representatives and let them know their position.
And repeat again, this is bill number?
It's AB 2109.
AB 2109. Okay.
Right. And anybody can go to the California State Legislature's website and go into the bill search. Every state has this, I'm sure, at this point in time. When you search for AB 2109, and you can pull up the history, you can see what, you know, where it's at. You can pull up the language and see exactly what the bill says. I need to go back and review that to see what the amendment was, whether that was something significant or not. But it is going forward, so I encourage folks in California in particular to get up to speed on that.
Okay, I just posted a link because I did a search and found something. It's taking my computer a really long time to open up any pages. But go ahead and... So this is something that is absolutely recent news.
Yes, just got through committee yesterday.
Okay.
So that's why I'm glad we have a weekly show and we can try to stay up to speed on at least some of these bills.
Okay.
The one in Vermont, one in Vermont that we've been talking about, S-199, which has been seeking initially to remove the philosophical exemption altogether, and they have gone through many different amendments of this bill, considering a version of like what they have in Washington State and what we just talked about in California and various other things where the schools have to post their immunization rates, and parents, if they don't like the low immunization rate of their school, can put their child in another school. I mean, they've just gotten absurd with some of the different amendments and things they've been considering. Well, just yesterday, again, very recent news here, we keep you up to speed here at Homeopathy World Community. Yesterday, they postponed a vote on the bill. This is one that got through the state Senate, but has been going through many delays and difficulties in the House, which I think is mostly good news for those of us who do not want to see this bill past.
And this one is S119?
199.
199. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sure. And this is in Vermont, and so that one appears to be postponed. That at least implies that they weren't sure they were going to have the votes to get it passed, and so they want to put it off. And again, they've been considering several different amendments through the course of this bill's history, and so we'll just have to see what happens. But every amendment, not surprisingly, of course, but every amendment has been just, well, what's another way that we can keep people from actually using the exemption, as opposed to language that reflects the very real reasons and problems with the outright removal of philosophical exemption. So we'll keep you tuned on that, but it looks like that's been shelved at least temporarily for the time being. We talked about another bill pending in New York State that would allow minors to consent to vaccines for sexually transmitted diseases. That would be HPV and hepatitis B, I think, specifically. It was introduced originally in 2011, and again in January this year, it referred to the Health Committee. The New York State Assembly webpage shows no further action at this time, so nothing new happening with that we can see. That's one, in my humble opinion, that because it is so blatantly unconstitutional that children cannot make medical decisions for themselves, that I really think that one should die a quick death from lack of any further movement on it. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Okay.
Now, New Jersey has, gosh, three or four pending vaccine-related bills. One in particular got my attention because it concerns religious exemptions. This one raises some constitutional issues, but what they're seeking to do there is simply make it more difficult for people to exercise the religious exemption. They're trying to tighten the pull the reins in on this a little bit. The way the current wording of the law in New Jersey is, it is pretty straightforward and simple to exercise a religious exemption. Now they want to see you write the specific, you have to explain how the administration of the vaccine conflicts with religious tenets or practices. And that's opens up a huge can of worms, because they say this, the proposed change in the law would require parents to submit the statement to the school. Now, this particular law would apply to elementary, secondary, and higher education. So, of course, with college-age students, most students would be 18 and doing this for themselves. But the problem with having to explain that and giving that to the schools, just real briefly, as a constitutional issue and a very practical concern as well, is that the odds that individual schools throughout a state will scrutinize these exercising proper or applying proper criteria and doing so consistently even within one school, let alone within a school district or across the state collectively, the odds of that happening, you know, in a proper and consistent way are very slim. Just as a practical matter, as a constitutional matter, that raises an equal protection question. That is, that our 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution requires that, and I believe this applies to state and local governments as well as the federal government, that we are to have equal protection under the law. And what we will very likely see, and I know we've seen this in New York and other states that scrutinize exemptions, is that we see inconsistent application of criteria and maybe not even clear criteria. It's really a legal question that ultimately should be handled by lawyers or perhaps agents of the state, if properly trained, but to have that fall to individual schools, as appears to be the case by the wording here, is problematic. So it's not so much something I want to, you know, jump out and write a legal memorandum on in the way that these, say, child consent laws are blatantly unconstitutional. But this is one, it's not so much unconstitutional as it is likely to create constitutional problems in the implementation.
Is this bill number, is this bill A2450? Or is it a different one?
Got the right one. This is in New Jersey. It's number 1829.
1829?
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Let me see if that's what it says here. Let me double check this real quick to see how they're
okay. The reason I ask is because mm-hmm. there was a bill A2450, conscientious exemption to mandatory immunization, the personal belief exemption, and that was in New Jersey in February 2011, which means that they were acting on this same principle a year ago. And so whether it was held up and a definitive answer wasn't given, or this is the same thing that has been amended, or what?
Yes, separate bill. The bill separate I'm talking bill. About is A-1829. There is another bill, A-1368, okay. in New Jersey, which is to provide for a conscientious exemption.
1368?
Mm-hmm. 1368, that's the number that is on the NDAIC
okay.
Advocacy Portal page. So, and there's a couple other good bills in New Jersey as well, too. Don't want to try to cover everything because I want to move on. There's so much to talk about here today. But
uh-huh.
But that's what's going on in New Jersey. North Carolina, we still have Senate Bill 508, which was introduced last year. It would amend current medical and religious exemption statutes to clarify that they apply in an emergency. And that got through the Senate, and it got through a first reading of the House in June of last year and was referred to a Committee on Health and Human Services. No action since that referral. So we need to get hop in here in North Carolina and get our representatives to push that along.
So let me ask you, was that one that you mentioned in New Jersey, 1829? That's the one. That's 2010, 2011.
1829 is the one that wants to tighten the reins on religious exemptions.
Okay.
And then A1368, also in New Jersey, is the uh-huh. one to provide for a conscientious exemption
okay.
to immunizations.
So when they put a letter in front of it, does that change it? Does that extend it? For instance, that same 1829 was from 2010, 2011. And then when I entered A1829, it popped up for 2012, 2013. So it was like the next year.
Well, every state has a different system for doing this. So a lot of and they use different letters depending on what their system is. It looks like New Jersey is using A for assembly, meaning the General Assembly, or what in North Carolina is called the General Assembly, referring to both Senate and House of Representatives.
Okay.
Some states will have S or SB for Senate bill. Some will have H or HB for House bill, depending on whether it was introduced, you know, one or the other. Sometimes a bill will have two different numbers, one for the House and one for the Senate, where they'll introduce the same language in two separate bills in each of those parts of the General Assembly at the same time. So it just, the particular procedure and nomenclature is just going to vary from state to state. But what you can do when you go to a state website and you search for bills, they'll give you an option whether you want to search the current, the current session, or whether
mm-hmm.
you want to look at
the
last
docket.
Year's session or the session before. Well, no, the session. Every General Assembly, every state legislature is in session for some part of each year. And so in the current session, there will be bills pending. A bill may have been introduced in a prior session, but it may be carried over to the current session. So, but you want to look at what's in the current session, because if it's not in the current session, then it's not up for consideration by the General Assembly. So,
okay. So this was the provides conscientious exemption for mandatory immunizations. Okay.
Right, that's one bill, and then there's a separate one in New Jersey that is that will be basically making religious exemptions more difficult to exercise, more problematic, adding procedure to that, which will, which I know from past history in other states and working with clients individually, is going to create necessarily a lot of confusion and difficulty for people. Might get me some more work, but I'm really not for it. I'm against it. And if that takes away from work for me, so be it.
Okay. So what else you have up on today's show?
Well, I think that's it for right now in terms of the legislation. Why don't we turn our sights to some of the recent news?
Okay.
Because there's, as always, tons of things happening in that arena. See if
okay.
I can find
the first one that you had, where the state is solely responsible for the vaccine, says the maker. This is an article by Carl O'Brien.
Yes, comes from the Irish Times, and this is yet another in the series of articles that we've been that I've been seeing and we've been talking about over time concerning the adverse effects of the swine flu vaccine, where that story is still far from over, as countries around the world now are trying to figure out how to deal with the adverse effects of that. And there were, at this point, Ireland and some other countries have confirmed narcolepsy as having a causal relationship with the vaccine. And so the question comes up then, well, who's going to compensate them, the manufacturer or the state or what? Because they did finally come around to acknowledging the causal relationship. Well, I think, of course, you probably would expect an attorney to say this, but I think the question here as to who pays for what is a legal one. It's going to be probably something that depends on the contractual relationship between the pharmaceutical company and the country or state, and in this case, Ireland. So the company said, in this case, I think it was GlaxoSmithKline who had produced the vaccines that it sold to Ireland, and Ireland paid somewhere between 5 and 15 million euros for over 900,000 doses, almost a million doses. And the company has said that they recognize that under the circumstances that they may have lots of complaints and claims for compensation, even if they were later found to be unconnected with the vaccine. Of course, they're always going to throw that in. They said it was likely that many people would assert that the events were caused by the pandemic vaccine based purely on the temporal association. Now, there's legitimacy to that concept. Just because you get a vaccine and then sometime in the near future after that have a health condition manifest doesn't mean that the vaccine caused it. But what we see in common practice, certainly here in the States and I suspect other countries as well, is that doctors will reflexively deny that there's any connection without looking to see conducting any tests or investigation, medical or scientific investigation, to see whether or not there's a connection. So while you can't just assume that because it's something that happened close in time that the two events are related, vaccine, narcolepsy, or whatever the adverse event might be, but neither can you assume that it's not connected either. But again, they've been researching this since the pandemic back in 2009 and 10 and have concluded that some of these are connected to the vaccines. But I think it boils down, again, ultimately, to sort of a contractual arrangement. You know, when I read the title there, and I bet when most people do, state solely responsible for vaccine, says maker. In other words, Glaxo is saying, hey, it's not our problem. If you had adverse events, Ireland, you go work that out on your own. We got our money. We gave you the product. We're done. We're out of here. We see that, I think, would tend to see that as a moral question, most of us, and I certainly did, looking at that. Well, wait a second. I mean, the vaccine manufacturer rushed these things through production, and they're not going to have any responsible at all for it? Well, not if they can help it. And so you know when they are in a position of saying, well, we'll make these vaccines and we'll get them through quickly, but we're not going to do that unless you take responsibility. So morally, I have great objection to the manufacturers having no liability. But as a contractual matter, Ireland is probably stuck with it.
And it's worse if it's something that's mandatory as opposed to something that is a selective choice of the person, because recently, I mean, if you think about what you've been saying all along, that there's a risk when you take any type of vaccine, and this includes taking the swine flu or the influenza, any kind of flu vaccine, because it's hit and miss upon what they have inside that vaccine that's going to deal with the current season. And here, just let me see the date on this article. May 1st, which is 2 days ago, the article in the News and Observer says that the flu season ended as quietly as it began. There really was no flu. And think about every single place that you have been walking out in your neighborhood, going to the drugstore, the pharmacy, the general department store, or anywhere you go, and you see big signs and poster boards everywhere, get your flu vaccine. Why are they pushing it in a season when there is literally no influenza in the state or in the nation? It's a non-entity, and yet you're going to be taking this risk, right? Are you able to hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So, So why are they pushing this on an entire population when we may not have a need for it? And this is something that Christina Chambreau, Dr. Veterinary Medicine, has just done a huge talk on the heartworm and the fact of why do they tell the veterinarians tell their pet owners to take this heartworm medication every month, 12 months out of the year, when the mosquitoes are only out seasonally a couple of months a year. Why are you pushing all these drugs onto your pet, maybe weakening their immune system, producing all of these chemicals in the environment, flushing it down wherever it goes? And these are things that we have to really be discerning and thinking about what it is, actions that we take, what it is that we do, and how it affects us, our longevity, and the health of our environment. So the fact that these manufacturers are making millions of doses of chemicals, they're toxifying the environment. And I compared it to your being concerned today about your carbon footprint. What are you leaving behind? What are you putting into the environment that's going to cause more pollution? And if it's chemicals, we need to use our pocketbooks and our stand up with our statements of what kind of actions we take to say, yeah, we don't want to buy that. Or, okay, we'll do this on a necessary as-is basis. Like, they now have printing, printing, I don't want to say print to go, but in an as-needed basis. You don't just print millions of documents, but when somebody needs it and wants to distribute it, then they print the amount that's needed. So,
well, Debbie, boy, there's a lot in there. We need to recognize that planet Earth is a closed system. And as individuals, that's not at all apparent to us. It looks like the world just goes on infinitely in all directions. And in many ways, on a practical level, at least prior to recent decades civilization, maybe it was. But we're really a giant fishbowl. And anything that happens environmentally in any one part of it ultimately affects the whole planet, a whole area, region, or even the whole planet. And so I read an article several months ago that said they had found traces of allopathic medications, pharmaceutical drugs, in the North Sea. Now, that is a large body of water, not near as large as the Atlantic or the Pacific, but it's a very large body of water. And that's a disturbing prospect, because every time you take a pharmaceutical drug, if it doesn't get stored and remain in your body, it comes out, and it gets in, ultimately that gets into the environment. And every time we're creating, I mean, I don't have figures, but, you know, millions, if not more, you know, pounds and tons of various chemicals for pharmaceutical and other purposes and applications that have varying degrees of toxicity and varying rates of speeds at which they do or don't break down, if at all, ultimately into non-toxic ingredients, and we're just creating more and more. So, I mean, we're polluting our planet, even through pharmaceuticals that are ingested internally. And so it's this real serious problem, and we really ultimately, individually and collectively, have to look at everything that we do in our daily lives from something like what you were just describing. What is the ultimate effect of what we're doing? Even if it's something that has a short-term positive effect for me, personally, if it's going to ultimately raise the toxicity of the planet, that's going to ultimately not be in my individual best interest, and certainly not in the best interest of society and the planet as a whole. So part of the paradigm shift that we're already experiencing but need to further along considerably with regard to how we address health and healing on our planet and our species, and for animals as well, for that matter, has to ultimately factor in the larger view and a really critical level of scrutiny about what really does work, what are the short and long-term effects for us or our pets, our animals, and the planet in a larger way. But I wanted to answer, you've already, I'm sure, hinted on this in what you were just saying, but I wanted to answer your initial question in part by moving to an article that was further down on our list. When we say, you know, why are we doing this? You know, there is medical literature and independent research showing that flu vaccines don't work. So why the big push for them, and why the big push in the last couple of years, which is ongoing and only increasing, that all healthcare professionals get flu shots every year, and why the push to expand not only the list of vaccines that healthcare professionals should be getting, not just the flu, but now they want DTaP and MMR, and the list will go on, you know, indefinitely if we don't do something about that, but also increasing the list of people, adults primarily now, who should be getting the vaccines, and we're going to see that list increase. As I mentioned before, in recent months, I've heard from completely new categories of people that I'd never heard from in my prior several years of practice, and I hope that I'm wrong, but I expect that the list of categories will continue to increase, and it will unless and until we act collectively to stop the insanity. But here's a short and powerful answer to, well, why are they doing this? It doesn't make sense scientifically. It certainly doesn't make sense morally and ethically. Well, of course, the cynical but a bottom line here, there may be more than one, but at least surface bottom line is, well, it makes business sense. And here's an article from comes to us from MarketWatch, is the website, marketwatch.com. And the title of the article is Vaccines Allure Remains Solid for Pharma, Attracting $2.5 billion in North American Capital Investment. An industrial info news alert. So from Sugarland, Texas, comes this article telling us that vaccines continue to attract the drug industry for the same reason that they always have. The vaccine sector is a darling, interesting word choice there, and that there always seems to be some government funding involved. As profitable as it is, the fact that there's government funding involved, it's like getting
the seal of approval. You know, I used to think of that on your magazines, on the women's magazines, you get the seal of approval if the government is sponsoring it.
Well, I heard a terrific phrase that I'm going to give proper credit to from Robert Scott Bell in the recent interview he did with Andrew Wakefield. He referred to the separation of vaccine and state. The pharmaceutical industry, and it's not the only one, but the pharmaceutical industry is so intertwined with state and federal government, of course, for the sole purpose from its point of view of controlling the laws, maximizing vaccine mandates, maximizing their profits, and so forth. And they've done this with incredible success from a pure business perspective to the horrible and tragic detriment and profoundly unnecessary detriment of individuals and families, because as you know, Debbie, as well as anyone, that there are much more effective and actually safe methods of dealing with prevention or treatment of infectious disease, and vaccines is not on the list of ways to do that when you really scrutinize carefully the science and history of vaccines. The reason the flu shot, and it's sort of interesting because I think there's perhaps the greatest or certainly a significant amount of scientific data, information, published studies, and so forth, showing that the flu vaccine is just, trying to be polite since we're on the air here, but just very unreliable as a source of actually preventing the flu. And the flu itself, as infectious diseases go, while it can be tragic, as any disease can for people, on the whole, the flu is a pretty mild thing to be concerned about in the first place. It's just, you know, it's real simple in one sense, because the flu vaccine is something that you supposedly have to get every year. And gosh, everybody on the planet should get a flu vaccine every year. Other vaccines, you may get a series, but then supposedly not need any more boosters for several years. But the flu vaccine, gosh, you got to get that thing every year. So it certainly, from a purely financial point of view, makes perfect sense. And if you ask the question from the financial perspective of the manufacturers, the way things are playing out almost always makes sense. You know, if you disregard the science, the morality, the ethics. So, you know, we need to recognize, as I think probably most listeners of the show do, that it's largely driven by finances. And that is, of course, not an acceptable reason. We do need to have what Robert
Scott
Bell refers
to. Well, you know, if you think about finances, and we want to bring down the budget, we want to create a healthy population that can serve, that can be your workforce, then we want to help the population's immune system. And we're going to have on Tuesday, May 8th, we're going to have Dr. Isaac Golden from Australia on the live stream video Health In show talk about the incredible Cuban experiment, where they gave the homeopathic nosodes to an entire population, millions of people, and they basically stopped leptospirosis in its tracks. There was just such a small number of people that got it, and the people who did not get the homeopathic remedy had the traditional rate of infectious disease from the leptospirosis after hurricanes and flooding of the country. So we're going to hear from him directly.
Boy, I'm looking forward to that. Because that's as far as I know, the most recent and largest
yes,
you know, demonstration of homeoprophylaxis, and really screams loudly, we should be hearing it screaming loudly. It certainly does to me, that there's something far better to do. But, of course, we're fighting against the politics of enormous pharmaceutical profits. So we're seeing tremendous and aggressive pro-vaccine movement from the pharmaceutical industry in the way of legislation, in the way of new requirements in hospitals, in the way of new populations being targeted for vaccines, and many other things that are going on in policy and law around the country
US. I wonder if we can change the thinking of the people in power to think that, you know, it's, you know, we are a workforce. The population is a workforce, and you want the economy to be strong. We don't have to buy into the vaccine theory or the herd theory or whatever. We can boost our immune system and do these homeopathics and take in better nutrition and help the small farmer to have organic farms and to provide nutritious foods and clean the environment. The whole, if we can switch the whole tables around and switch it into the thinking of how you can really make money by being a honoring the earth, preserving the earth, be a caretaker for the earth, which is what our duty is as human beings. That is really what we have to change the mindset of the people who are the powerful legislators and industrialists and give some moral ethical value into their lives.
Well, those of us who are aware of the issue have an obligation to become involved in whatever way that we can, and that's going to be different for everybody, but we have an obligation to become active and involved participants in supporting a paradigm shift. It doesn't necessarily, and a large and critical piece of that, especially in the vaccine arena, has to do with being legislatively aware and legislatively active. And sometimes being legislatively active doesn't mean anything more than sending an email or making a phone call or writing a letter. But participation is critical. It doesn't necessarily take a majority. A loud minority can sometimes get their way, but it absolutely takes as many of us as we can get. The more people we have speaking up, the greater the chance we'll be heard. And it takes persistence. You know, we're not going to win every battle. We have to keep fighting anyway. And that's what really is going to ultimately win the day. I mean, to me, and on one level, it really is just a matter of time. Ultimately, you know, the world runs in cycles, and sooner or later the truth is going to be exposed. But we can either be an active part of that and see it in our lifetime, or we can leave that job to someone else, deal with the tragic consequences of not participating, and not see the change. So whatever participation means for you as an individual, the responsibility is there for you to lend your voice one way or another to the shifting paradigm, and that's what will eventually cause that to happen.
Okay, we have about 9 minutes left to the show today. Did you want to touch upon any of the other news topics? And then we'll talk about what we're going to do. Let's see, next week is going to be the 10th. We're going to have a regular show.
We have Greg Glaser with us, do we not, next week?
That's right. Okay.
That's right. So, attorney Greg Glaser from California comes on once a month with us here and always has Greg is an excellent legal researcher and gets into the history as well as the law and just has terrific insights about healthcare and healthcare rights. So we're going to be picking up, I think, where we left off last month with Greg.
Part two.
Yeah, you don't want to miss that. It's
It's the origins of health freedom. Is that correct?
That sounds correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you want to touch upon? Just let we're jam packing our hour into so much great news. What did you want to talk about in terms of things that are happening out there?
Let me mention just very briefly that often when we talk about vaccine news. Issues and items that we're talking about articles that are linked on the news page of the Pandemic Response Project, and that's pandemicresponseproject.com. So I encourage, all spelled out, encourage folks to go there and skim through the article titles and click on the ones of interest to you. Boy, there was an interesting one talking about the lack of compassion in American medicine, and it was this article comes to us. It's from the Alliance for Human Research Protection by way of the OneClick group, and they were referring to articles in the New York Times. And I just want to skim real quickly over a couple of the items here, Debbie. Not particularly surprising, but consistent with what we were just talking about with the financial incentives for vaccine manufacturers. And this was not talking about vaccines specifically, but I thought it was really important and relevant because it helps to underscore that the things that we talk about with the vaccine issue, many of the underlying conditions and concerns are throughout the healthcare system and healthcare policy. and probably extend beyond the topic of healthcare into other areas as well. But there are now, for example, debt collectors going into hospitals when someone is convalescing, maybe after surgery, and they're going to get, you know, hit up with an unexpected visit from a debt collector coming into by their bedside, hitting them up for payment. You know, it's like you can almost understand it from a business point of view, but that just really fails the common sense morality. You know, somebody recovering from an illness and is still in the hospital, they don't need to be talking to a debt collector. You know,
I call them up when they get home, maybe.
But
I think that's true, and if I'm not mistaken, my son who works in the emergency room in New York also has situations where a person is coming in a emergency situation where they might be dying, and right on their heels is someone who's trying to get something from them, you know, legally or medical insurance or whatever it is. And, you know, these people are not in any position to be able to get their legal rights and health freedom rights and speak for themselves when they're on the verge of death.
Well, I'm not sure about private hospitals, and it may vary from state to state, but certainly any public hospital, any government-funded or government-related emergency room, I think has probably a legal as well as the ethical and moral obligation. If someone comes in with a true emergency, you treat them and you deal with the money later. But this article talks about people being hit coming into the emergency room mm-hmm. about payment before they even get treatment. And
okay.
that raises huge red flags. Now, there are some people who can't afford insurance and can't afford doctors, and so even for minor things, the place they can go is the emergency room. If you're talking about people coming in, someone comes in with a bad cold, you might talk to them. So it's not necessarily clear here how discriminating or not, you know, the finance people are. But we all know the horror stories of debt collectors harassing with calls and letters and so forth to somebody at home. Well, you don't do that to somebody in a hospital who's sick. It's just an area where that should not even be an option, but it's happening. Another thing that's happening is that insurance companies are shifting the way that they decide what they pay or how much they pay. They gave a real interesting example here where a guy had a $7,000 bill and would normally have been responsible for about $2,000 of that because of the insurance. I'm using just well-rounded figures here. But then because of the insurance company shifting the way they do reimbursement to be the equivalent of Medicare standards, all of a sudden the person is responsible for over $6,000 of the $7,000 bill. So again, it's all money-driven, profit-driven. But where, if anywhere, above all other places, where should you not do that? And that's in healthcare. There needs to be a different standard of business practice in the healthcare arena. And if people don't, you know, want to get into the business, then they should maybe not get into the business. But it gets to a level, you know, if somebody is in a vulnerable position because of a serious health condition, that to me just sounds like, and I'm using the phrase generally and not as a legal phrase, but it just sounds like emotional abuse to me. You just don't hit somebody when they're down like that. You deal with it, you know, by phone or through the mail at their residence, not at the hospital. But
we have about 3 minutes left, so I did want to mention to any listeners that you have the vaccine guide, and if you go to Homeopathy World Community, you'll see your picture right there on the right-hand column. Click that, and it will take you to a link to learn a little bit more about the vaccine guide. You want to tell the folks about that?
Sure. It's an ebook, the Authoritative Guide to Vaccine Legal Exemptions, and it's applicable to just about any and every context in the U.S. where vaccines are mandated. And depending on how you count, there are over a dozen different contexts in the U.S. where vaccines are mandated, and that number has been and probably will keep growing as new categories become added to the list. And all of them have some different law that applies. So this is a good way to get the background information that you need in order to be able to make informed vaccine exemption decisions. You'll know far better, for example, when you do or don't need an attorney. A lot of times you don't, but sometimes you definitely do. So definitely something to consider if you or either yourself as an adult or your children, or you have situations where you are concerned with immunization requirements and are wanting to know how legally to avoid them.
Okay, so we're going to close with your singing us out, and we'll see you and Greg Glaser next Thursday at noon.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together, like people everywhere. We dream about a world at work where people really care. Our past and our lives before us, our journeys can be begin. So they do. Wisdom from within. Share your light, let it your peace be of earth. Walk by walk, we are reaching the world. See the world around us, it's pain and misery, but now we look. Allow our souls to shine, bringing forth a great new love and healing for mankind. Share your light, let your love be your thirst. One by one, we are changing the world. It takes an act of loving will to cause a change to be. So light your inner candle and never guard.